the smell of grandmother's kitchen lingers in the yellowed pages of old cookbooks. These forgotten recipes tell stories of hard times when families stretched every penny and used creativity to fight hunger. Today, we journey through 25 poor man meals that fed generations during the Great Depression, wartime rationing, and economic struggles. These aren't just recipes, they're survival stories passed down through families who knew that with enough ingenuity, no one would go hungry. Creamed chipped beef on toast. The military men knew it by a colorful name, SOS, or shit on a shingle. Back home, mothers served it to hungry children without the crude nickname. Simple dried beef, sliced paper thin, swimming in white sauce over toast. During the Depression and both World Wars, dried beef kept without refrigeration and stretched to feed many mouths. The recipe couldn't be simpler. Melt butter in a pan, stir in flour to make a roux. Add milk slowly until it thickens, then toss in chipped beef. The salty meat flavored the entire dish, while the creamy sauce turned a few slices of beef into a meal that could feed a family. Served over toasted stale bread, it became dinner for pennies. Grandmothers would rinse the beef first to remove some salt, a trick learned from necessity when hypertension became a concern. Modern palates might find it too salty, but during harder times, salt preserved what precious protein families could afford. Pea soup with dumplings. On cold winter days, when the pantry held little more than dried peas, families turned to this filling soup. The dried peas simmered for hours with an onion and perhaps a ham bone, if one was lucky. The long cooking transformed hard pellets into a thick, green meal. The dumplings made it special. Simple balls of flour, salt, and water dropped into the simmering pot. They puffed up, soaking in the flavor of the soup below. Children would count the dumplings, making sure everyone got their fair share. In Scandinavian immigrant homes across the Midwest, this soup became Thursday dinner tradition. The dumplings made the soup stretch further when meat wasn't available, turning a pot of peas into a filling meal that stuck to ribs and warmed from within. Onion sandwich. Nothing speaks more plainly about hard times than the onion sandwich. Two slices of bread, a thick slice of onion, salt, pepper, and if times weren't too hard, a smear of butter or lard. That's it. Raw onion's sharp bite provided flavor when little else was available. Children would sometimes sprinkle sugar on top to cut the harshness, a poor man's caramelized onion. The onion provided vitamins when fresh vegetables were scarce. In coal mining towns across Appalachia, men carried these sandwiches into the darkness, unwrapping them hours later for sustenance during long shifts. The strong smell meant nobody would steal your lunch, and the powerful onion was believed to help counteract coal dust in the lungs. Sometimes necessity creates virtue from the simplest ingredients. Water pie. Perhaps no recipe better captures ingenuity in the face of scarcity than water pie. This Depression-era dessert starts with an empty pie crust. Then you pour in water, sugar, flour, butter, and vanilla. Through the magic of baking, it transforms into a custard-like filling. Families saved sugar rations for special occasions like birthdays or Sunday dinner. Water pie let them stretch those precious sweeteners into a dessert that felt like luxury. The smooth, vanilla-scented filling created something from nearly nothing. Church suppers featured these pies alongside more expensive fruit versions. Nobody admitted which family brought the water pie, sparing them embarrassment while ensuring no child went without dessert. The recipe appears in community cookbooks across the South, sometimes called Depression Pie or Desperation Pie. Honest names for honest times. Hoover Stew. Named bitterly after President Herbert Hoover during the Great Depression, this one-pot meal combined whatever was available. Usually macaroni, hot dogs cut into small pieces, canned corn, and canned tomatoes. In Hoovervilles, shanty towns named after the president, many blamed for their poverty, community pots of this stew simmered daily. One hot dog could flavor a pot, feeding 12 people. The pasta provided bulk, the canned vegetables added nutrition, and the hot dog contributed protein and fat. Soup kitchens served versions of this stew, adjusting ingredients based on donations. Sometimes government cheese replaced hot dogs, or cabbage stood in for corn. The basic formula remained the same. Stretch a small amount of protein with pasta and vegetables to feed many hungry mouths. Bread pudding. No scrap of food went to waste during hard times. Stale bread found new life in bread pudding, cubed, soaked in a mixture of milk, eggs, sugar, and cinnamon, then baked until golden. If raisins were available, they added small bursts of sweetness. Bakeries sold day-old bread at reduced prices, and thrifty housewives transformed these bargains into desserts that tasted like luxury. The recipe adapted to whatever was available, sometimes using water instead of milk, or stretching two eggs with extra flour. In New Orleans, fancy restaurants now serve bread pudding with whiskey sauce as a gourmet dessert. But grandmothers remember when it was simply a way to use every crust of bread when none could be spared. The warm, sweet comfort of bread pudding turned necessity into something children requested by name. Ham hocks and beans. The wealthy ate ham steaks. The poor made meals from what remained, the bony joint where the pig's foot connected to the leg. These ham hocks, packed with connective tissue and small bits of meat, flavored pots of beans that could feed families for days. Dried beans soaked overnight, then simmered slowly with a ham hock. After hours of cooking, the meat fell from the bone in tender shreds while the beans absorbed smoky pork flavor. Served with cornbread to soak up the rich broth, this meal became a cornerstone of Southern cuisine. Farm families who butchered their own pigs used every part of the animal out of necessity. The ham hocks could be smoked and preserved, flavoring meals throughout winter when fresh meat was scarce. Today, chefs rediscover this humble cut for artisanal soups, but for generations, it simply meant survival. Rabbit stew. When the garden failed and the pantry emptied, men took shotguns into fields and forests. Wild rabbit provided free protein for rural families willing to hunt. The lean meat required slow cooking to become tender. Rabbit stew combined this foraged meat with root vegetables, carrots, potatoes, onions, whatever grew in backyard gardens. The rabbit stretched further in stew form than roasted whole. Every bit of flavor leached into the broth, which soaked into dumplings dropped on top. During World War II, when meat rationing limited beef and pork, government pamphlets encouraged rabbit raising in victory gardens. Domestic rabbits converted garden scraps and weeds into protein. Children learned early not to name these animals. They weren't pets, but survival. Pinto bean sandwiches. When lunch meat became an unaffordable luxury, cold pinto beans replaced it between bread slices. Left over from dinner the night before, these beans provided protein and filled empty stomachs. Mashed slightly with a fork and mixed with chopped onion and a dash of vinegar, the beans gained flavor that made the sandwich more than mere sustenance. Sometimes a thin scraping of mustard added tang when little else brightened meals. In coal mining communities and textile mill towns, these sandwiches appeared in lunch pails and children's school bags. The bread came from oven-filling baking days when seven or more loaves prepared all at once saved precious fuel. The sandwiches represented parents' determination that their children wouldn't go hungry, no matter how tight money became. Potato soup. The humble potato, cheap, filling, and easy to grow, saved countless families from hunger. Potato soup transformed a few spuds into dinner with the addition of water, salt, and if available, an onion and splash of milk. The basic recipe adapted endlessly. Bacon grease instead of butter for the roux, wild onions foraged from spring woods, or flour thickening the broth when milk was scarce. Families with cows added cream for special occasions, while those without relied on the starch of the potatoes themselves to create creamy texture. In Irish immigrant communities, this soup carried memories of old country famines when potatoes meant life itself. Generations later, potato soup still appears on tables when budgets tighten or cold weather calls for comfort. The simplicity masks its importance, a meal that prevented starvation with ingredients anyone could afford. Corn cob jelly. After kernels were removed for dinner, corn cobs still contained sweetness and flavor. Thrifty households extracted this last bit of goodness by boiling the cobs to create a sweet liquid that, when combined with sugar and pectin, became a delicate honey-colored jelly. The flavor defied easy description, subtly corn-like, but with floral notes similar to honey. Spread on biscuits or cornbread, it provided sweetness when sugar was rationed. During World War II, when sugar stamps limited purchases, this jelly stretched sweetener further than most recipes. Farm families developed this technique generations before industrialized food systems. The recipe appears in handwritten cookbooks passed through families, sometimes with notes indicating which variety of corn produced the best flavor. Modern foraging cookbooks have rediscovered this technique, rebranding it as artisanal rather than acknowledging its roots in genuine need. Garbage soup. Despite its unappetizing name, garbage soup represented remarkable resourcefulness. Nothing edible entered the actual garbage. Instead, vegetable peels, meat bones, wilted greens, and aging root vegetables simmered together in water with salt and pepper. The soup pot lived on the back of the stove, with new additions joining the broth daily. Potato water, the liquid from cooking pasta, even the juice from canned vegetables enriched the ever-changing meal. Each night, the family ate whatever version existed, knowing tomorrow's might taste completely different. Thrifty cooks strained the finished broth through cheesecloth for clarity. The resulting soup, with perhaps a handful of rice or barley added for substance, provided vitamins and flavor when fresh food was unavailable. One Depression-era cookbook called it perpetual soup, a gentler name for survival in liquid form. Vinegar pie. When fruit became too expensive or out of season, vinegar provided the tangy flavor normally supplied by lemons or apples. This desperation dessert combined vinegar, sugar, eggs, butter, and spices to create a sweet tart filling inside a simple crust. The chemical reaction between vinegar and baking soda created a light texture similar to more expensive fruit pies. Cinnamon and nutmeg disguised the vinegar's harshness, while sugar transformed it into an almost lemon-like brightness. Church socials during hard times featured rows of these golden pies alongside the more traditional apple and cherry versions. They sold for pennies less, feeding families with dignity when pride prevented accepting charity. The recipe appears in handwritten family collections across America, sometimes labeled mock lemon pie, to spare children's complaints about eating vinegar. Egg drop soup. When chickens reduced their laying during winter months, each egg became precious. Egg drop soup stretched a single egg into a meal for four by slowly pouring beaten egg into hot broth, creating delicate ribbons that suggested abundance. The broth itself came from whatever was available, chicken feet and back simmered with an onion perhaps, or simply bouillon cubes dissolved in water when times were hardest. A handful of green onions added color and vitamins if the garden offered them. Chinese immigrants brought this technique to America, where it merged with Depression-era thrift. The simple combination of hot liquid and beaten egg created protein-rich meals requiring minimal ingredients. Families saved their precious eggs for this soup, knowing the visual transformation made children feel they'd eaten something special. Biscuits and gravy. Southern kitchens turned flour, lard, and milk into filling meals through the magic of biscuits and gravy. The biscuits required minimal ingredients: flour, lard or bacon grease, salt, and a leavening agent. The gravy transformed a spoonful of grease and flour into creamy sauce that covered the plate. During harder times, the gravy contained little meat, perhaps crumbled bits of salt pork or the last pieces of sausage. The flavor came instead from black pepper, which grew plentiful and cheap after the spice trade expanded. Liberal shakes of pepper turned white gravy gray-speckled and gave the impression of more meat than actually existed. This breakfast sustained farmers through morning chores and factory workers through long shifts. The combination of fat and carbohydrates provided cheap energy when physical labor demanded fuel. Even now, diners across America serve this humble meal, though few remember its origins in genuine poverty. Fried bologna. When steak became an impossible dream, families turned to bologna, a mixture of ground meat scraps pressed into neat circles. Frying transformed this humble lunch meat into something that sizzled and smelled like proper cooking. The preparation couldn't be simpler. Cut a single slice into the edge to prevent curling, then fry until the edges crisped and the center bubbled. Served on white bread with mustard, perhaps with a slice of government cheese, it became a hot sandwich that felt like restaurant food. During the Depression and continuing through the 1970s recession, fried bologna became dinner when paychecks stretched too thin for conventional cuts of meat. Children often preferred it to healthier options, never realizing their parents served it from necessity rather than choice. The distinctive bologna bubble that formed during cooking delighted young eaters who poked it with forks before taking their first bites. Ham bone beans. Nothing demonstrated household thrift more clearly than the journey of a holiday ham through subsequent meals. After Sunday's celebration and Monday's sandwiches, the bone, with its clinging bits of meat, transformed plain beans into smoky, flavorful meals. Navy beans or Great Northern soaked overnight, then simmered all day with the ham bone, an onion, and perhaps a bay leaf, if the spice drawer allowed such luxury. The long cooking extracted every molecule of flavor from the bone while softening the beans to creamy perfection. These beans improved over days, growing thicker and more flavorful. Served with cornbread or over rice, they provided complete protein through the combination of legumes and small amounts of meat. The recipe appears in cookbooks with the honest title, Makeshift Beans, or more poetically, as Day After Bounty. Tomato gravy. When gardens overflowed with tomatoes but little else graced the pantry, tomato gravy turned basic ingredients into comfort food. Bacon grease or butter formed the base, flour created thickening, and garden tomatoes provided both liquid and acidic brightness. Poured over biscuits, rice, or even simple slices of white bread, this gravy brought vitamin C and flavor to otherwise plain starches. The recipe adapted seasonally. Green tomatoes in early summer, ripe ones in late summer, and canned tomatoes through winter months. In Appalachian communities where food traditions reflect generations of making do, tomato gravy remains beloved, even when pantries contain more options. The tangy sauce cut through the richness of fatty foods and brightened meals during dark winter months when fresh produce became distant memory. Sugar sandwiches. Perhaps nothing speaks more directly to childhood hunger than sugar sandwiches. Two slices of white bread spread with margarine or butter, then sprinkled with sugar. Sometimes cinnamon added spice if the budget allowed this small luxury. During the Depression, parents with nothing else to offer created these sweet treats that cost pennies but filled empty stomachs. Children believed they received dessert rather than understanding the family's desperation. The sugar provided quick energy when little else was available. In oral histories of hard times, elderly Americans often mention these sandwiches, sometimes with nostalgia, sometimes with lingering shame at having once been so poor. The simple combination reappears whenever economic hardship strikes, becoming something of an edible economic indicator across generations. Potato peel soup. The ultimate testament to waste not, want not cooking, potato peel soup turned what most people discarded into actual meals. Thick potato peels, scrubbed clean before removal, simmered with onion and salt until they released their starch into the cooking water. During World War II rationing, government posters encouraged this soup as a way to extract nutrition from every scrap of food. The resulting broth, often thickened with a spoonful of flour, contained vitamins that would otherwise be thrown away. Sometimes a splash of milk added protein and calcium. Cookbooks from multiple countries contain versions of this soup, each reflecting regional hardship German recipes from post-war years, Irish collections from famine times, American pamphlets from Depression-era extension offices. The humble potato peel connected human experience across continents and generations, all united by hunger and ingenuity. Bread soup. When bread became too stale for sandwiches, but too valuable to discard, it transformed into soup. Cubed stale bread simmered in broth, usually made from bouillon cubes when meat bones weren't available, until it softened and thickened the liquid. Italian immigrants called it ribollita, reheating yesterday's minestrone with added bread. Pennsylvania Dutch communities named it brown soup, simmering bread in milk with butter and onions. Every culture, finding itself facing empty pantries, discovered this method of stretching minimal ingredients. An egg, beaten into the hot liquid just before serving, added protein and creamy richness when eggs were available. More often, the soup relied on the bread itself for substance, with perhaps an onion or carrot added for flavor. The result tasted far better than its humble ingredients suggested, a testament to human creativity in the face of scarcity. Mock apple pie. The ultimate food illusion, mock apple pie, contained no apples whatsoever. Instead, Ritz crackers or soda crackers simmered in sugar syrup with cream of tartar, and lemon essence created a filling with the texture and tartness of apples. During the Dust Bowl years, when fruit orchards died and produce became prohibitively expensive, this clever fake provided the comfort of apple pie without the impossible-to-obtain fruit. The crackers softened in the syrup, while cream of tartar added the necessary acidity that mimicked apples. The recipe famously appeared on Ritz cracker boxes during the 1930s, but community cookbooks contained versions dating back to pioneer days when wagon trains moved west through areas where apples couldn't grow. The chemical magic that transformed crackers into something remarkably apple-like represented American determination to maintain normalcy even in abnormal times. Mustard sandwiches. When lunch meat became unaffordable, but children still needed school lunches, mustard sandwiches appeared in lunch pails. A thin layer of yellow mustard between two slices of bread, nothing more, provided the appearance of a normal sandwich. The sharp flavor of mustard made the absence of meat less noticeable. Children sometimes traded half their sandwich for half of another child's equally humble meal, creating variety in otherwise monotonous eating. Parents sent these knowing their inadequacy, but unable to provide better. During the 1930s, school systems began lunch programs, partly because teachers reported children arriving with these barely there meals or nothing at all. The mustard sandwich became shorthand for hardship, appearing in oral histories and depression narratives as evidence of how low circumstances had fallen. Codfish gravy. Salt cod, preserved fish that required soaking before cooking, provided protein when fresh meat became unavailable. Flaked and stirred into white sauce, it became creamy gravy poured over potatoes or biscuits for complete meals. Fishing communities along both coasts relied on this preserved staple during winter months when boats couldn't safely leave harbor. Inland, salt cod traveled well and stored indefinitely, making it insurance against hunger when other options failed. The strong flavor sometimes challenged children's palates, but hunger proved an effective seasoning. Families added chopped hard-boiled eggs when available for extra protein and visual appeal. During Lent, Catholic families ate this gravy on Fridays, transforming religious obligation into practical thrift. Milk toast. Simple as its name suggests, milk toast combined three basic ingredients, bread, milk, and butter, into a meal that provided comfort and nutrition when little else was available. Toast became warm base for hot milk, sometimes sweetened with a sprinkle of sugar or made savory with salt and pepper. The milk softened the toast while providing calcium and protein. For the youngest and oldest family members, this easily digestible meal proved especially important during illnesses when stronger foods caused distress. In literature and film, milk-a-toast became shorthand for blandness and weakness, an unfair assessment of a meal that sustained families through their darkest financial hours. The simple combination appears in medical texts as ideal for invalids and in poverty narratives as the last resort before actual hunger. Its humble nature belies its importance in American food history. These 25 recipes tell stories of American resilience through scarcity. They remind us how recently genuine hunger threatened families who today might take abundance for granted. The yellowed recipe cards in grandmother's box aren't just cooking instructions, they're survival manuals from times we would do well to remember.